Thanks for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Good morning. In case I haven't had a chance to meet you yet, my name is Rob. I'm one of the pastors at Next Level Church, and a very honor for you to be here today. I know that you're probably a little extra tired. This is the one Sunday of the year where you can come to church and you can look hungover and no one's going to judge you, because we all feel the same way that you feel. We all lost an hour of sleep and everyone else is not going to church. So they can adjust and sleep in and whatever, but we're here and we're doing it. And so I'm excited that you guys are here. I hope that I won't put you to sleep in the next few moments, but I do want to ask you to do something to help with your engagement. I would love for you to check out a free app called YouVersion, and the steps are up on the screen. It's a chance for you to get a little bit more out of what you're about to experience. There's a place to take notes. You can give prayer requests there. There's a question of the week. You can do online giving there. There's a whole bunch of resources and things in there. So go ahead and take a chance to do that through your smartphone or your tablet. You can bring a tablet to church. I think that's pretty cool. You can bring your iPad or your, I don't know what other tablets are out there, but the other tablets, you can bring those as well. What? Did someone say something? What? Someone... What's another tablet? I felt like someone just yelled one. Nook? Who? Okay. No one knows anything about tablets. That's what I'm getting out of this. Just bring a tablet. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's not paper. It's an electronic thing that looks like this. Do not, though, this is just free. This has nothing to do with anything. Do not, though, if you get a tablet like this, take this with you on vacation and start taking pictures with it, okay? This is the new equivalent of the fanny pack. For those that use something big like this to take pictures on their vacation, people will judge you for that. So just, holy cow, I don't know. I'm tired. I don't know where my brain is today. Let's pray. Let's get focused and pray. I want to pray before we engage with our text today. If you would just close your eyes and bow your heads. God, we're just so thankful that you use us, and so thankful that you give us a new morning to wake up. And even though we've lost an hour of sleep, God, we're here. And so we're just asking that you would do something, that you would speak to our hearts, that, God, the pain and the distractions and the frustrations and even the joyous things that happened this week, would you just put them all in the background so that we could listen to you? We ask that you would help us to hear from you and that you'd give us the courage to do whatever you tell us to do. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, we're continuing a series today, and if this is your first time, I want to do a little bit of a recap for you. Now, if you've been here every week in the series, you're probably getting a little bit tired of the explanation of where we get Here Be Dragons. And so you might want to zone out during this part. You may be tempted to kind of roll your eyes. But I want to tell you, if you're a regular tender, why we do a recap every week. Every week is someone's very first Sunday. And if it was your first Sunday, I wouldn't want you jumping in and saying, what in the world do dragons have to do with anything? I would want to catch you up to speed. And so I do this recap every week to make sure everyone is on the exact same page. So if you are a regular attender and you've been coming over the last few weeks, I'm just going to ask you a few questions about the title of this series, Here Be Dragons. It comes from the 1500s. Some cartographers, those that were drawing out maps, visited North America, and they started drawing out parts of North America. And in the areas where they could not visit, they became afraid. And even though they'd never been there before, they wrote some descriptions on the map. Does anyone remember any of the descriptions? Just shout it out there. Here Be Dragons. Yes, fiery scorpions, giants, all of that is good. They wrote that in the margins of the maps. And what they were communicating is, not only are we afraid to go explore these lands, we want you to be afraid to explore these lands because we think there are dragons there. And in the 1800s, hundreds of years later, a guy by the name of John Franklin took the map and he crossed out all of those descriptions. He crossed out Here Be Dragons, and he wrote in big, bold letters. Anyone remember what he wrote? Here is God. Our main idea for this entire series is simply this: in your greatest fear lies a great opportunity to experience the presence of God. In your greatest fear lies a great opportunity to experience the presence of God. Every single one of us has something that we are afraid of. And some fears are irrational fears. Some fears are silly, and you don't have to get over those fears. But there are other fears that are literally stopping you from living the story that God wants you to live. And I don't know where these fears come from. They could be something that's just inside of you. It could be an insecurity that you're born with. My kids have some fears that they did not learn from me. My kids, they have now overcome this fear, but for about 2 years, they were deathly afraid of the playground at Chick-fil-A. Deathly afraid of it. They had not had a bad experience there. They had never gone and been tortured at Chick-fil-A. There was nothing that should have spoke fear into them. Chick-fil-A is a very safe playground. And for those of you that are my age, I'm 37. If you're my age, do you remember what the playground was like when we were kids? It was outside. It was a metal sheet that was like hot as Hades. And you went down it and got third-degree burns. And your teacher said, rub some dirt on it and stop crying. Today, though, we have these nice, really cushy, no one can get hurt at the Chick-fil-A playground, but yet my kids were like deathly afraid. There was an instance where they would go up to the first level, and if you've ever been to Chick-fil-A, you know it has levels, and then it has a slide at the top, and my kids would go up to the first level, and then they would freeze in fear, and they would see other little kids crawl up past them, and I would point to the kids, like literally my kids are like 3 years old, and right when they turn four, and I would say, look, that kid is wearing diapers, and he's lapping you, like, you are potty trained. There is more in you than this. Go follow the diaper kid. Like, he will take you to victory. And they would just sit there in fear. And literally one time at the Victory Chick-fil-A, I had to crawl my big tail up inside of this playground to get my son because he was so afraid. There is a weight limit to the playground. I exceed it by 100 pounds. I was so blessed by God that I didn't tear the whole thing down as I was grabbing my son as he was clutching onto the net of there saying, no, I don't want to go. And I was grabbing him and I had to take him down. It was awful. It was horrible. Now, since then, my kids have overcome that fear. Now they love the Chick-fil-A playground. But as my kids are clinging to this fear, there are other things that they don't fear that they should fear. Like, on almost any given night when we have company over, it is not a rare occasion for one or both of my kids to go back to their bedroom, strip down naked, and start running around the house in front of our company. I don't know where they get this from. I'm not afraid of the Chick-fil-A playground, and I am afraid of getting nude. Like, there is a deep-seated fear inside of me. I think that I break speed records by the time I go from the shower to my clothes. It is the fastest experience ever. But my kids, they don't fear what I fear. So I don't know where they got their fears from. I don't know, and don't look at my wife. She doesn't have these fears either. Like, I don't know where they got them from. But they were born with some deep-seated fears. And if they're not careful, these fears will cause them to stop living a story that is actually worth talking about. You have some fears inside of you. And some of them are silly fears, but some of them are legit fears. And God is stirring something and wants to stir something inside of you, but there's some voice inside of you that's telling you, you can't do this. You can't go there. You can't accomplish this. You're not good enough. Stop what you're doing. And I don't know if that voice just comes from some insecurity that you have, or maybe it comes from someone else in your life that looked at you at some point and said, hey, stop dreaming. You're not good enough. Let's be real with who you are. You're not talented enough to do that. Let's talk. Let's focus on something that you can do. At some point, we went from being a dreamer to being realistic. If you remember being a kid, the one thing that kids have is they may have some irrational fears. They may deal with their own things. But for kids, one thing that they do not lack is the ability to dream. And if you ask a kid, what do you want to be when you grow up? Their answers are like all over the place. There is no fear in their answers. And my kids will say things, anything from like a superhero to a princess to an astronaut or a professional roller skater who's also a baby doctor. That is what my daughter is currently holding on to. They don't know that professional roller skaters don't make any money, and if you're a baby doctor, you don't have time to go roller skating. She doesn't know any of that yet. That's just a dream that she has, and I'm betting that you had some dreams inside of you. In fact, I just want to know them. I want you to just transport yourself back to when you were in like fourth, fifth, sixth grade, somewhere around there. And if right now, if I was speaking to your fourth grade self, what are some of the things you would have said that you would want to be when you grew up? What are some of the dreams that you had? When someone asked you as a fourth grader, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? What did you say? And I just want to hear from some of you. Just raise your hand. I'll call on you. Anyone want to talk about your dreams? Yes. Race car driver. I love that. What do you do today? Yes. That is about as perfect as can be. Race car driver to quilting. Adrenaline rush. All right. Anyone else? Yes. Bus driver. That's what you wanted to be. That's awesome. What are you currently? A homemaker? That's awesome. That's great. Okay, yep, right there. A vet, incredible. All right, I saw some more hands. Yep. Paleontologist. You no doubt were inspired by Jurassic Park. Maybe. Personally, after seeing Jurassic Park, I wanted nothing to do with dinosaurs because they will eat you and it's not a good experience, but that's awesome. And sorry, just to focus on you for just a little bit to embarrass you. You are currently in college. What are you studying to be? Yes. I love that answer. We went from a paleontologist to a something. Oh, the question threw you off. Okay. History and philosophy. Okay. 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 The conversation between you and your parents must be awesome. There's no conversation. Okay. We're paying how much for you to be something? That's awesome. Great. All right, let's do a couple more. Something you dreamed to be when you were a little kid. Anyone else? Just raise your hand. Yep, in the back. Love it. Wanted to be a rapper. Love it. Yes. Superman. Okay, yeah. NFL quarterback. I love that. That's great. All right, let's do one more. Anyone else have a dream? Something you wanted to be? Yep, I see that hand. Okay. That's awesome. Teach dolphins and humans how to talk to each other? Okay. That's great. If you were to go back in time and talk to my fourth or fifth grade self and say, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? I was convinced that God had called me to be a professional rapper. I was, don't laugh at my dream. I didn't laugh at your dream. That's what I wanted to be. I felt like God was calling me to be a professional rapper. I remember sitting in church and feeling this sense that God was calling me to rap for the rest of my life. This was in the 90s. The rap game was very different. It was early 90s before gangster rap hit the scene. And it was very realistic at the time that someone from Hampton, Virginia, who was a Caucasian, could become a professional rapper. My dreams were destroyed when the rap culture changed. But at the fifth and sixth grade, that's what I wanted to be. And I did not fulfill my dream, but if I did, it probably would have sounded something like this. Hold it now, I'll watch a hoodwink. I'll make you stop think. I think you're looking at Aquaman. I'm some fish to the dish of the like Charlotte Swiss, I like sushi because I never touch a frying pan. Hot like wasabi when I bust rhymes. Big like Ian rhymes because I'm all about value. Burt Campus got the mad hits. You try to match wits. You try to hold me, but I bust through. Go make a break and take a figure like a stinger ding and shake it like vanilla. It's the finest of the flavors. Go see the show because then you know the vertigo is on the grow because it's so dangerous. You have to sign a waiver. Whew, that's it. That's all I got. At some point, though, in our lives, we stopped dreaming childlike dreams and we started becoming realistic. And I don't know what it is, and I don't even know what age it is, but somewhere between middle school and high school, you stopped having these dreams that you could actually do something, that you could live a life that was full of adventure, and you started living a life that was practical. And practical is realistic, but it's not very exciting. And at some point in your life, maybe you told someone, maybe it was an adult, when you were in high school thinking about what you're going to go to college, and you said, hey, I want to go to college for this. And they said, let me sit you down and tell you how the real world works. That's not a degree that you can do anything with. Or maybe you were in college getting out, and you were just starting to have these fears inside of you. I've spent time 4 years getting a degree to become something. And my time is wrapping up, and I don't know exactly what that something is. So let me grasp onto something practical. Let me hold on to something that I can do with my life. And we start trading in our dreams for a 9-to-5 paycheck. And we go through the mundane. And we just live life, and we do what everyone else is doing. And I think that God has called you to something so much bigger than that. I think that God has called you to not just wait for things to happen to you, not just wait for an opportunity to live something exciting, but I think God has called you to live an adventure, not for your fame, but for His. I love this quote by pastor and author Mark Batterson. He says, we need to quit living as if the purpose of life is to arrive safely at death. Instead, we need to start playing offense with our lives. We need to quit living as if the purpose of life is to arrive safely at death. Instead, we need to start playing offense with our lives. How many of you have ever played basketball? Okay, two of you, four of you. Okay, how many of you have ever seen a basketball game? Okay, there we go. Now we're on the same page. Now, if you've ever watched basketball, it is different than like football or hockey in that the same players that play offense also play defense. And here's what happens in a basketball game. When you are playing offense, you are controlling the speed of the game. When you play defense, you are simply reacting to what someone else does. And what most of us do is we simply live life and wait for something to happen to us, and then we respond. We just live life, and then when the doctor says we have cancer, then we take our health serious and start doing what we should be doing. We just live life, and when we get fired, then we take an opportunity to go pursue our dream job. We just live life, and we wait for her to say, I no longer want to be in a relationship with you, for him to break up, and then we start doing what we should have been doing all along in our relationships. We are passive people who are waiting for a story to come to us. But I love this quote because God hasn't called you to simply play defense with your life, to wait around and react for things to happen. He's called you to play offense, to go out and say, hey, what is the problem in our world and how am I uniquely designed to solve it? You have the ability to write the story. God is inspiring it, but you have the ability to write your own story. Don't wait for it to come to you. Live a life of offense. Something happens, though, in our minds that causes us to stop living and dreaming big dreams and causes us to just sit back and wait for things to happen. And I think it's fear. And today, our text is going to speak directly to this. It's going to speak about a guy who should have had a lot of fear, but he didn't. And it's just going to speak about a guy who took a holy risk for God. And these holy risks are incredibly important because I am convinced that the thing that will bring you closest to God is when you're doing a God-sized adventure. When you are living life based on your own strengths and your own abilities, it does not lead you to your knees. But when you are living a story for God, it leads you to drop to your knees and say, oh my God, if you don't show up, I'm going to fail. And so often we rely on our own strengths. And so if you wonder why your prayer life is kind of boring or there's not some excitement or you don't feel a passion or a fire for God, it is because it is way too easy as humans to live and to react in our own strength. But you start living for something so much bigger for yourself, it will drop you to your knees and say, God, I need you. I'm doing something that I cannot accomplish on my own. I'm doing something that I will fail if you don't show up. And I am convinced that when we take a holy risk for God, it makes us come alive and it draws us into the presence of the Almighty God. I want to give a little bit of context for our text for today. Our text is the backstory to one of the most famous stories ever told. And I believe it is a true story, but it is a story that has been told for literally thousands upon thousands of years. It's a story that if you grew up in church, you've heard it before. In fact, you maybe even sang songs about it, and you learned about it in Sunday school or in children's church. If you didn't grow up in church, though, this story is so big and so significant that I am almost guaranteeing that even if you didn't grow up in church, you are familiar with at least some of the parts of this story. The story is about a little shepherd boy by the name of David. And he fights this big giant named Goliath. Now, we're familiar with that because even if you didn't grow up in church, if you ever watch sports and there is like an undermatched team versus like a mega powerhouse team, the announcers almost always say this is a David versus Goliath match. And what they're saying is there's no way this little Cinderella team can beat this powerhouse. But those are the stories that we love. We love it in sports when the team that shouldn't win wins. Last Sunday, I watched my Lakers, one of the worst teams in the league, beat the Golden State Warriors. It was amazing. None of you can relate to my pain right now, but it was a David versus Goliath match, and I haven't had a lot to hold on to as a Lakers fan, so I'm ready to hold a banner up because we won one game. Okay, focus. Get over it. They don't care about the Lakers. Back to the text. This is a story about David versus Goliath, and we're so familiar with that story. What we miss, though, is the backstory, what led up to it, the events that led up to David fighting this giant. Most of us aren't that familiar with it, but if we were the ones that were living this story, if the same things happened to us that happened to David, we would have never taken the battlefield and fought this giant. We would have never done this amazing thing for God that people are talking about literally thousands upon thousands of years after this event. Our text comes from 1 Samuel 17. We're going to start with verses 20 through 24. You can follow along in YouVersion or it's going to come up on the screens. It says, early in the morning, David left the flock in the care of a shepherd, loaded up and set out as Jesse had directed. He reached the camp as the army was going out to its battle positions, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines, facing each other. David left his things with the keeper of supplies, ran to the battle lines, and asked his brothers how they were. As he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great, what's that next word?
Fear.
Fear. All right, let's stop there just for a second. Here's what's going on in this text. There is a shepherd boy named David, and we don't know exactly how old he is, but most scholars think that he's somewhere between the ages of 14 and 18 years old. Now, I don't know how they get that age. I'm not a scholar, so I'm sure they are right. I know, though, in the Jewish culture that you are considered a man by your 12th birthday. And so when David is talked about in this story, he's always referenced as a boy. So I think there's a great chance he could have even been as young as 12 years old. He is at this battlefield not because he's of age to fight. He is at this battle because his dad asked him to go check on his brothers. Now, you got to understand what's going on here. Back then, they didn't have Twitter. They didn't have social media. They didn't have CNN or Fox News. They had no way of checking on how the battle was going. And Jesse had a whole bunch of sons, and all of them, except for David, were at this battlefield fighting. And he was nervous and worried about his son, so he goes to his youngest son, who is a shepherd boy. Now, shepherds are not considered glamorous jobs. Like, I personally love shepherds. I think shepherds are really good-looking and smart and talented. But in their culture, they saw shepherds as being lowly, that this was a job that wasn't fit for someone that had a lot of strengths or a lot of giftedness. And so David is a lowly shepherd, and his dad comes to him and says, "Hey, I need you to go to the battlefield and check on your brothers. Here's some food. Take it to them and just update me. Let me know, are they still alive?" Well, David goes and takes this food, and he shows up to the battlefield, and this is what he sees. If you've ever seen a movie like Braveheart or any of those like ancient type war, even Lord of the Rings does this, where the men line up on two sides and there's like a whole army on this side, the other army is on this side, and they just face each other. And then when the war cry is yelled, they run at each other and just have this huge clash. Well, that's what David is expecting to happen. He walks up and he joins the Israelite side, and there's a whole army of Israelites, and on the other side are the Philistines. And he's standing there waiting for the battle to happen, and instead of them having the war cry and clashing and running at each other, this giant steps out from the Philistines and he defies the army of the living God. And David stands up there and says, "All right, guys, you hear what he said? Let's go challenge him. This is when we run at him. This is when we fight them. What are you guys waiting for?" And no one is moving. What did they do? You guys just read it in the text. They ran away in what?
Fear.
So they are not doing what they should be doing. There is a problem. There is a problem that no one, a uncircumcised Philistine, should not be calling out the armies of the living God. There's something inside of them that should have just risen up, a holy anger that said, "This is wrong. This is a problem that we can solve. Let's go stop this." But instead, they were afraid. Let's keep going in our text. It says, "Now the Israelites had been saying, 'Do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his family from taxes in Israel.' David asked the man standing near him, 'What will be done for the man who kills a Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?' They repeated to him that they had been saying and told him, 'This is what will be done for the man who kills him.'" So David, when he hears this giant defy the armies of the living God, he looks around and he sees that no one's acting, and he says, "Why isn't anyone facing him? Why isn't anyone challenging him? Why isn't anyone fighting this guy?" And the men start saying, "Hey, listen, there's actually a reward that if one of us had the courage to fight him, we would get riches beyond anything we could imagine. And not only would we get riches, but we would get the king's daughter in marriage. And not only that, we wouldn't have to pay taxes." Now, some of you, just the fact that you would never have to pay tax for the rest of your life, you're ready to fight Goliath right now. You're like, "Sign me up. I will take out that giant." David hears this and he's like, "Okay. The guy's defying the armies of the living God. That's a big enough problem. It doesn't matter if there's a reward. Someone needs to take this guy out. But you're telling me you also get a reward if you do it? This is a great opportunity. Let's go fight this guy." And everyone says, "No, you don't understand. He's a giant. He's big. He's a huge problem. And we're not qualified enough. We're too small. We can't fight this big of a battle. And I am convinced that in your life, there's a problem. And the reason the problem isn't being solved is because you're looking at it like it's a giant. And you say to yourself, I'm just too small. Who am I? I'm insignificant. I'm a nobody. I've messed up so many times. I've got such a bad past. There's no way God could use me to actually solve a problem. God calls other people to solve these problems. But there's a giant in your world. And maybe God's not waiting on someone else to solve it. Maybe he's put you strategically in this place for you to do something about it. And if you want to live a story that is so much bigger than yourself, you've got to stop complaining about the giants that you're facing, and you've got to stand toe-to-toe with them and trust that God is going to give you everything you need to slay this giant. I don't know what the giant is in your world, but can we just talk just for a second about the problems that we face? So often the problems that we have are major problems to us, but they're so insignificant compared to the major problems of the world. Did you know that right now in America, there's 100,000 kids who are in the orphanage system, who don't have a mom and dad, who are looking for someone to say, hey, would you help raise me? My own parents gave me up, and now I'm in the foster system, and I go from foster parent to foster parent, and I have no one to call my own. There's 100,000 kids in America. This isn't talking about a foreign land. This isn't talking about somewhere else. In America, there's 100,000 kids in the foster care system. Did you know that there are 300,000 churches in America? That's not 300,000 Christians, it's 300,000 churches. If just a portion of the Christians who went to churches every Sunday took the command seriously that true religion is this, to take care of widows and orphans, we would not have any kids in the foster care program in America today. But that's a big problem. That's a major problem that a Facebook rant won't solve. It is a giant. And there's some of us that say, well, I'm just too old. I can't solve that problem. I'm not called to that. Well, great. Well, there are so many problems out there in the world. Did you know that every 10 seconds a kid dies because of a mosquito bite and he gets malaria and they die? Some of you live in Pocosin. And you know what it's like to live with mosquitoes. But when you get bit by a mosquito in Pocosin, you don't think this may cost me or my kids my life. But literally, every 10 seconds, kids are dying in Africa because they don't have the money to buy a mosquito net. That's a problem that we can solve. Did you know that there are zero homeless shelters in Hampton Roads? Zero. There's a men's shelter that in order for you to get in there, you have to do their program, but it is only for men. There is nothing. And did you know that there are women with kids who are living on the streets because they're homeless, and there's not a single shelter for them? Did you know that? That's a problem that we can do something about. There are problems in our world, and we are so focused on our own problems, on our own issues, that our story is about us. But you start living a story for God, it takes you on an adventure that is so much bigger, and when you start seeing how you can help solve the rest of the problems in the world, your own problems become so much smaller. There are some giants in this world, and God has given you a desire and some passions, and he's given you some energy, and he strategically placed you to go toe-to-toe with these giants. But you've got to be willing to take your eyes off of yourself and ask God, what do you want me to do about it? And when you're willing to follow God, he will take you on an adventure that people will be talking about long after you've gone away. Well, David is stepping up to solve this problem. He starts to just be consumed with the fact that there is a giant who is defying the armies of the living God. And he starts to kind of raise some noise and just say, this is wrong. Someone needs to do something about it. And as he's starting to kind of build some courage, and as he's starting to think about and talk about fighting this giant, this is what happens next in our text. 1 Samuel 17:28. When Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle. In your life, when you get on fire for God, when you say, God, what do you want me to do? When you feel like God's put something in you, a desire, a passion, maybe to change jobs, maybe to write a book, maybe it's to start a new organization. When there is something inside of you that says, this is a problem in the world and I've got to do something about it for the glory of God. When you step out to do that, I promise you there's going to be someone who's going to stand in your face and say, you cannot do that. There will be someone that will challenge you, and most likely it's going to be a family member or a really close friend. And in this text, David comes to the scene. He wasn't looking for a fight. The fight came to him. And he said, this is wrong. Someone needs to stand up against this giant. No one should defy the armies of the living God. And his brother, his oldest brother, comes to him and says, what are you doing here? You are so selfish. You're just here for your own good. Why are you? I know you. I've grown up with you. Eliab starts to speak negatively into David's life. And I don't know if you're the type of person that cares what other people think, or maybe you're the type of person that can just live life and it doesn't matter what anyone says, but I'm the type of person that if an Eliab spoke up to me, I probably wouldn't have gone on to fight the giant. I would have said, yeah, they must be right. They're seeing something that I don't see. I'm not good enough. I can't do it. Handful of years ago, I was not the lead pastor of the church that I worked at. And I had, I got to speak at this church about 5 times a year. And so whenever I spoke, it was a special treat for me, and it was what I loved to do. And so I poured a lot of time and energy into my talks, and I had a lot to learn. I didn't think I was the best at it, but it was what I really felt called to do. And so I loved being able to preach whenever I got the opportunity. And on this given Sunday, I spoke, and I felt great about what I gave. I feel like I put the time in, and I felt like I delivered a message the best of my ability. Well, that day I went to lunch with my family, and they all gave great compliments and said that I did a really good job. And the next day I got anywhere from like 5 to 10 emails from people from the church who said that God had spoke to them through the talk that I had given. But on Tuesday of that week, I got a letter from someone. It was an anonymous letter. And at the time, I didn't know that people that don't have your back write anonymous letters. I thought that if someone took the time to write me a letter, it probably meant that there was something good inside of it, because it takes something, it costs you something to write a letter. So I opened this letter with expectation that there was going to be this great message, this message of encouragement, and what I read was 4 pages of not just that I didn't like the talk, but that I am a bad person. And in the letter it said things they were convinced that everyone in the church knew how bad that talk was. And they said things like they were embarrassed to call this church their home church. And they said things like they were so glad that Wavy TV 10 wasn't there to capture footage of this talk. Wavy TV 10 had never been at our church in the history of our church. I don't know where this person got that from. But it went on. There was not a single, hey, I know you're young. I know you tried your best, but you may have missed the mark. There wasn't a single bit of encouragement. It said over and over again, I've stayed up all night. I just can't stop thinking about how bad your church is. I think I'm going to leave the church. Like, you just one thing after another. And in that moment, the only voice I could hear was this anonymous voice of a person I don't even know if I ever met. It didn't matter to me that my wife was proud of me for the talk. It didn't matter to me that my family was proud. It didn't matter to me that I had 10 people who said God had spoke to them through my talk. All that mattered was that some voice of someone didn't like me. I was reading this letter, and as I got through it the 4th time, as I got to the end of it, I heard this little, still, small voice that said, you know, even if you preached a perfect sermon, someone would crucify it. And that little voice actually spoke some truth into my life, because the truth of the matter is, there are often times when I don't do the adventure that I feel like God's calling me to do because an Eliab speaks up against it. And I'm so afraid of them not liking me or them disagreeing that I don't do what God is calling me to do. Instead, I spend time focusing on trying to get everyone to like me. Now, the truth of the matter is when you live a story that is bigger for you, it is going to scare some people. And it's going to cause some people to say, no, you're not gifted enough. I've grown up with you. Don't you know how many faults you have? What do you mean you're going to go do this new adventure? You are too old to be trying this at your age. There's going to be someone that's going to speak negatively into your life. And just before we just camp out, because I'm betting that there's someone in your life who you said, yep, they were the Eliab. Maybe it was a high school teacher. Maybe it was a college professor. Maybe it was a roommate, a past boyfriend, girlfriend. I bet there's someone in your life that you said, yep, they were the Eliab to me. But before we move on to our text, I just want to, just for a second, just ask you to think about, are there times when you are the Eliab in someone else's life? Because we've all experienced it, but fear does something for us. When we become afraid, we become the Eliab to someone else's story. And here's a couple questions I want just you to wrestle with to see if you're an Eliab to someone else's story. Number one, do I project my fear onto someone else's story? Do I project my fear onto someone else's story? Truth of the matter is, none of us in here have a crystal ball. None of us know the future of someone else's decision. And so I know you might have some concerns and you might have some fears and you might be scared to death. But the truth of the matter is none of us know what's going to happen. And so are you speaking to them because you have their best interests in mind? Or are you speaking to them and telling them not to do it because you're afraid? Eliab never once in the text said, "Hey, David, I'm worried that if you fight this giant, you're going to die." What he said to him was, "You're not good enough. You're selfish. You're prideful." He was speaking his fear. Eliab was too afraid to face the giant, and he was speaking his fear into David's life. Number two, do I feel threatened by someone else's courage? Do I feel threatened by someone else's courage? When you see someone else taking some risks and going out and starting a new job or starting a new ministry, do you start thinking, well, this is going to impact me? If my spouse goes and leaves on this adventure, like I have to go with them, or if this coworker leaves, it's going to impact me, or if they go and write that book, it's going to impact me. Do you feel threatened when someone else is courageous? Eliab, no doubt, was threatened. He was threatened because he's the one that should have been fighting the giant, but yet his little punk brother had left some sheep in a field and was getting ready to live one of the greatest stories ever told. Number three, do I trust God enough to allow someone to fail while attempting their dream? Do I trust God enough to allow someone to fail while attempting their dream? The truth of the matter is just because you have a dream doesn't mean you'll be successful. And you may fail, but in your failure, you'll still experience the presence of God. And when someone in your life starts talking about doing something for God, taking a new step, doing something adventurous, do you trust that God is big enough to be there for them even if they fail? And I'm not talking about sin things. If someone comes to you and says, "Hey, listen, I feel like God's leading me to have an affair on my spouse," you say, "Just shut up, stop. That is dumb. That is no." You become Eliab to them. I'm talking about when someone says, "I feel like I need to go try this new experiment, this new job, this new adventure. I feel like we need to go out and do this to solve this problem." And that moment, even if you think you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, you're not talented, you don't have the education, you don't have the money, there's no way this is going to happen. When you start having those feelings, you've got to ask yourself, do you trust God enough to allow them to attempt what God is putting on their heart? Because God's big enough to hold them. And God's big enough to provide. This is how David responds, though, in the text. He responds by saying, "Now what have I done?" said David. "Can't I even speak?" He then turned away to someone else and brought up the same matter. And the men answered him as before. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and then Saul sent for him. So David was not deterred by this negativity. And I just want to tell you, when you start living an adventure for God, when you start getting in God's presence and start doing what God's leading you to do, it's going to make a lot of people feel uncomfortable. And don't you get deterred. Don't you stop doing what God's calling you to do just because someone has said you can't do it or someone else is afraid. You keep your focus and you keep doing what God has called you to do. And David doesn't turn around. He doesn't stop. And eventually he gets the attention of the king of Israel. Now just imagine going from being a shepherd boy who has no influence, who's been hanging out with sheep all day, to standing in front of the king of Israel. And this is what the king says, and this is so heartbreaking. David says to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." Saul replied, "You're not able to go out against the Philistine and fight him. You're only a young man, and he has been a warrior from his youth." You ever notice that when people start to live an adventure, people that aren't living a very good story tell them what to do? "You can't do this. You're too limited. You're not good enough. You're not smart. You can't." Don't start thinking about these dreams that you have inside of you. Now that childlike voice that's telling you you are destined for something different, tell them to be quiet. Let's be realistic here. You're not good enough. There's no way you can do it. I am convinced that if we want to live a story worth living, we're going to have to overcome some conflict in order to get there. And the conflict may be someone that is looking at you and is afraid. It may be someone that's over here that says, "Don't do this, you can't do it." It may be someone who is scared to death of living an adventure of their own. And in that moment, you've got to ask yourself, am I obeying the voice of God or am I living my life for other people? And I don't know what God is calling you to. I don't know what your adventure is. But what I do know is there are some problems in your life and you talk about those problems. And maybe those problems are in your life because God has specifically wired you and gifted you to stand toe-to-toe with these problems and figure out a solution. I don't believe that God is calling you just to check in to a job and to just get a paycheck for the rest of your life. I don't think that God is calling you just to retire safely one day and never have any adventures. I think that God is calling you to follow Him closely. And when you follow God closely, it's going to scare the mess out of you. But it is so worth it to be in the presence of God. What are you doing right now that if God did not show up, it would be a failure? What is God calling you to? What is it that is in your world that you would need God's help? What is it? There is something that God has strategically placed you, and it's not my job to carry your burden. It's not my job to do whatever God's called you to do. I don't care how young or how old you are. But if there's a problem in this world, God has strategically placed you there to do something about it. And I know you're scared. I know you're scared. But facing our fear is a great opportunity to experience the presence of God. So here's an application question for you. This is something to wrestle with. Are you living God's story for your life or the story someone else wants you to live? Are you living God's story for your life or the story someone else wants you to live? I can't answer that question for you. It's something you've got to answer. Are you living God's story? If you are, that's great. I'm not trying to guilt you into something. I'm not trying to make you feel bad about your life. I'm just asking the question, are you living God's story for your life? Or are you living the story that someone else wants you to live? One of these things will keep us up at night in the best way possible. The other one will leave us living a mundane life where we just keep asking, is there more? Is there more to life than this? And I think the answer is yes when you're willing to follow God on an adventure. Will you guys pray with me? God, thank you so much for this day. Thank you for... God, thank you for calling us to things that scare us. Thank you for the fact that you still use little shepherd boys and little shepherd girls, and that you use us in our weakness and our failures. That God, thank you that you call us to do things that we could never do in our own strength. God, right now, I just pray that you would be sending so many of us out on amazing adventures. I ask right now that you would just be stirring in our hearts, God, some problems, some things that we need to solve. I ask you'd be raising up some new leaders to start new ministries. I ask you'd be causing us to see problems and not get depressed or down by it, but come up with some solutions that will help fix what's going on in our world. God, help us to ultimately just chase you. And help us to live a story that honors you. Help us to live a story that is so much bigger than ourselves. We just ask that you would speak, that you would move, and that you'd give us the courage to follow you, no matter what you tell us to do. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website, nextlevelchurch.net, or find us on Facebook or Twitter.